Welcome to Let's Talk Sales, the podcast that's all things sales and business development. This podcast series is for CEOs that are looking to build strong companies, sales VPs and sales managers that want to take things to the next level, and of course, salespeople that are looking to improve. This podcast is brought to you by Calavia, the sales playbook platform made for your team by your team. The Calavia Sales Playbook houses your company's best practices, templates, and processes, and it also functions as an online sales training academy for your existing sales team and for new hires. Learn more at calavia.com. That's C-O-L-L-A-V-I-A.com. Today's podcast is part of our Sales Leaders Talk Sales series, lots of S's there, where we talk to sales leaders about growth and development. This is Rebecca Smith, and I am very excited to be talking with Scott Ingram today. Scott is the host of the Sales Success Stories podcast. Very, very excited to have you on here. I know how much amazing, incredible insight that you have from all of the amazing interviews you've done on your podcast. So thank you for being with us today, Scott.
My pleasure. It's great to be here.
I'd love to start by getting to the basics here. Can you start by sharing a little bit about your career history and how it led you to start the Sales Success Stories podcast?
Yeah, so the short version of my career history, I, like many, maybe most people, ended up in sales kind of accidentally. I started my first company when I was 20. And for the Breaking Bad fans, the name of that company, ironically, was Gray Matter Technologies, an IT consulting company. And I learned very, very quickly that if you don't have customers, you don't really have a company. And so that was where the sales journey really began. That was in Orange County. And about 14 years ago, I sold that company. We moved to Austin and I've kind of started a family since. And most of the time that I've been in Austin, I really embarked on a more traditional professional sales career. And the last 10 or so years have predominantly been in the SaaS side of that. So I worked with Bizarre Voice before they went public. I worked with Eloqua before they went public, while they went public, and then were subsequently acquired by Oracle and kind of became the beginning of the Oracle Marketing Cloud. And today, I work with a company called Relationship One. I still work kind of in that Eloqua ecosystem. I've really, really enjoyed that technology, and in an account director role, help about 15 Fortune 500 scale organizations make the most of their investment in the Oracle Marketing Cloud through the professional services and development services that Relationship One offers. The way that that led to the podcast is I have really through that entire time consumed all manner of sales content. So I've read many, many books and watched lots of webinars. And what always struck me is that nearly all of the sales content out there comes from quote unquote sales experts who may or may not have sold anything but themselves in years and oftentimes decades. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, you know what, I want to hear from, I feel like sales is evolving very rapidly these days, and I want to hear from the people who are at the top of their game right now, what they're doing to be successful. So it's, in a lot of ways, it's a very selfish project. This is all about me and how I can become better. But on the Sales Success Stories podcast, I only interview individual sales, but they're all individual contributors as well. So, you know, as an intentional individual contributor, there's lots of other podcasts that can focus on the sales leaders. You've got a great one here. I only talk to individual contributors who are either number one in their organization, or if they work for some giant organization. I've talked to folks at Microsoft and LinkedIn and Paychex and Cintas, and the list goes on and on. In those organizations, it's often hard to discern exactly who's number one, given all of the different divisions and geographies they have. So in those cases, I'm willing to settle for the top 1%.
Settle for the top 1%.
That's good. That's the idea. Yeah.
Well, I have to ask you then, how has your, I guess, you know, you mentioned that this began to kind of help you to learn what tips and tricks were kind of out there to help you grow as a salesperson. You've been doing this for a while now. Have you accomplished your goal?
Well, I probably not, because I don't think you can ever get to perfect, right? So, you know, the goal is to improve, and that's an ongoing process. And so it's absolutely contributed to my own results and my own personal growth. Absolutely.
Yes, definitely, for sure. We can always grow and learn and continue to grow and learn. As we know from back in April, our theme was personal development, and that's something that from an individual perspective, whether you're a sales leader, your CEO, you're a sales manager, or you're a salesperson, it's always important to put aside that time to continue your development. So podcasts like your podcast are a great way to continue to develop professionally. And that's awesome. So, you know, I'd love to transition and ask you a little bit about the themes that you hear, because I'm sure that you hear some things consistently from the top 1% of sales professionals that you talk to, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the thing that I kind of spend the most time thinking about. What's ironic, though, is I have to come on other sales podcasts to talk about it, because I don't ever do it on my own show.
Yeah, so, this is kind of like a debrief, right?
It is. And it's also Scott therapy. So, you know, I think the biggest thing is, you know, at this point, gosh, I mean, we're into dozens of conversations that I've had. And what I find is that the approach and the styles are all over the board. In fact, I don't ask consistently enough about it. I certainly did in some of the early days. I'd say somewhere pretty close to half of the top 1% sellers that I've interviewed on my show are introverts. So I think that in general, the stereotypes, what you have in your head of this is what the best of the best salesperson looks like, all of those stereotypes, we've really kind of smashed. And the most consistent theme is it's about being your authentic self. Right. All of these individuals have kind of figured out there's a high level of self-awareness, and they understand what they're good at, what the unique value that they bring is. And they've tried to own that and make it themselves. I find that, and I've had this conversation with a few of the guests, where if you go too far down any one specific methodology and try to deploy that exactly without bringing yourself to that table and making it your own and personalizing it, it just doesn't work. It's not effective. So being your authentic self seems to be probably the biggest, most consistent overarching theme. Okay. And then the others are, and this is one of those stereotype smashing things, right? It's not about them and their compensation and about this giant money grab and getting everything they can, no matter what's in their way. I think they care deeply about the customer and about their results. And that shows, right? Oh, when that comes across, people can sense that, and they're more likely to trust you and work with you versus kind of that stereotypical approach where you're, I mean, in a lot of cases, I think some of us, we do business with companies despite their salespeople because we have awful experiences. The best, I can guarantee you, those are not the top performers. It's not how they act.
Definitely. Oh man, you just brought up a memory of apartment hunting and how I specifically didn't move into a place because the salesperson was so bad. I didn't want to have to run into this person every day in the elevator.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and again, at the end of the day, you know, I think the cliche at some level is true that we do business with people we know, like, and trust.
That's right.
But, you know, you also have to have a good solution. And I think the real key statement in all of that is it's about the trust. And the way you develop that trust is if you're actually doing the right things for your customers, then it's real and genuine. Like, real trust isn't something that you fake.
Definitely. Exactly. And you can't force it. And I think that a lot of times that's a big mistake that some salespeople make, is trying to force things upon people that they don't want, or kind of just, you know, pushing a deal too quickly and not building that rapport and that relationship that goes alongside with it. I mean, that's so important, right?
Sure. Well, if you're in a transactional sales environment, maybe that works, but it only works once and you don't get to work with that person again.
That's right. That's true. Were there any other themes that you noticed, or anything that kind of repeats, let's say?
Yeah, you know, the other big overarching one before I finally put my finger on kind of the authentic self piece was belief. And when I say belief, I mean that at several different levels. So they certainly believe in their company and in the solution that they're offering, but probably more importantly, they believe in themselves, and they believe in their process and the way that they go about delivering what they're doing. So it kind of ties to that authentic self piece, but there's just that deep level of belief that helps them trust in themselves, really, to get to that point where they can transfer trust to others and consummate a sale.
Okay. Now, this is kind of you may or may not, I don't know where we're going to go with this one, but our theme this month in July is on managing remote salespeople. And I know that a lot of managers have a hard time managing people remotely. Was that something that you ran into very much when you were interviewing people, or salespeople that were out on the road that really didn't interact much with their companies? Or would you say that most of the salespeople that you interviewed kind of were within the culture, and the culture helped to drive their behaviors, if that makes sense?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a mix. Okay. So harder to talk about the show from that perspective. Why don't we talk about me from that perspective? Because
okay.
I have spent the last, 6 or 7 years as a remote salesperson.
Oh man, so you're perfect for this question.
I live this day in and day out. And I think some of the other places that we'll sort of go, like, for example, when we talk about one of my favorite books, I think that ties in really well to your theme.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm definitely going to ask you about your favorite books a little bit later. So save that one for me. And, you know, so tell me, is it hard? Do you struggle as someone who is working remotely?
No.
Good.
I actually struggle when I go into an office, and part of it is I think I've been doing this so long. I have developed such a strong personal system in the way that I work that when I go into an office, partly it's because I don't go into the office every day. I'm actually based in Austin, Texas. My company is headquartered in Minneapolis.
Okay.
I'm there, I don't know, 4 to 5 times a year. Part of my issue is when I'm there, I'm seeing people that I don't get to see very often. So the distractions are maximized to a great degree. But there's all just the other distraction and noise. I'm not used to having people around. I'm used to being in a position where I can be very, very focused, very, very heads down, to the point where, you know, traditionally, the last, again, 5 or 6 years, I've probably spent between 40 and 50% of my time on the road. The last 2 years, that's really started to come down. I'm down to about 25%. And it's amazing how much more productive I am being in the office and not on the road. It's just hard to be productive on the road with airports and travel and hotels and meetings that are moving all over the place and all the other kind of travel you have to do. But I feel like my effectiveness with the more time that I'm able to be in the office is just off the charts right now. And for me, again, it's just that ability to be focused and not have yet another layer of distraction in addition to all of the digital distractions and everything else that we all deal with.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And kind of speaking to that, the digital distractions, I'd love to hear a little bit more about your philosophy on selling in today's economy.
Yeah. So my philosophy is that sales, and I'm not sure where this quote originated, but the idea that sales isn't something that you do to someone, it's something you do with them. Mm-hmm. And for me in particular, working with large enterprise accounts, I feel like this really has to be a partnership, because oftentimes, not only am I helping them navigate the solution and what we're trying to accomplish and gain as a result, we're also navigating their procurement process, which can be awful in many cases in some of these larger organizations. And one thing that I'm actively working with a couple of clients on, because they're working on very large projects that touch a lot of different areas of the organization, it's helping them find and sell to an executive sponsor, because I know that if they don't have that oversight and somebody to kind of call those balls and strikes and help this alignment across the organization, I know that they won't be successful in that project at the end of the day. So it's helping them navigate that entire thing. And if we do that effectively, not only do I walk away with some more revenue and a nice contract, but they come out with the delivery of that project. I'm not worried about, to me, the sale doesn't end when I get a signed contract. I believe in really taking ownership of the result and making sure that what we promised and the expectations that we set in the sales process are what we actually deliver in our work together. It's about giving them the result that is what they were initially sold on.
Definitely. In some ways, it's kind of a new beginning. It's almost like you're starting over, but you know, at a new point. You know, when you're in the beginning of the relationship and you're prospecting, you're starting to build that relationship. And then once they become your client, you're starting again in a new way, continuing from there. And it's not supposed to end. Obviously.
For sure. And it's a new team, right? Because I have primary and lead responsibility when we're in that sales process. When we move into the delivery process, I don't own that. I'm not their project manager. I'm not responsible for delivering the work. But again, it's taking ownership and making sure that things are progressing and that we do stay in touch and they are getting the results that they signed up for.
Definitely. And do you have a process for that that you could share a little bit more about? Or is it kind of private to you, I guess I could say?
No, there's a lot of process. And, you know, it's my role is a little bit different because I am in an account management type of role. So I do stay closer to these accounts, and it's a lot easier for me to have regular cadence calls, both internally. Let me kind of walk you through a real world example and kind
awesome.
Of the way that I try and manage my accounts, because it's all about maintaining a proactive stance. I don't ever want my client to call me and surprise me with something. I always want to be in front of them a step or two and sort of leading them through that process. So the way that I've structured a lot of my relationships, it's really based around a quarterly on-site meeting structure. So whether you want to call this a quarterly business review, typically we just call it an on-site, and I will bring together their key stakeholders, the client stakeholders, and I'll also bring the leads from my team. So I might have a project manager, I might have other services leads that are coming together. And it's really just about spending time together, having a whiteboard, checking in on, and I've actually got a document I might be able to share with you, kind of a generic version for you to include in the show notes. But it's really just where are we, right? How are we doing? There's almost like an NPS level, score level, like how are we delivering against your expectations at this point? What are your key goals as a client? What are those key objectives? And I'm also really transparent, and I will share ours. I will say, you know, we're trying to grow our relationship and deliver more value, or I'd like for you to do more references for us, or maybe make a referral, those types of things. And then it's just drilling down into those things, right? How are we delivering against those objectives? What is the plan? What is the roadmap? What are the next steps? How does that work? So that's the big, big part of the process. And then there's a variety of different cadences that fit within that. So about the midpoint between those quarterly on-sites, I'll do about a 90-minute call where we'll debrief the previous one and kind of check in on the accountabilities and the things that we said we would do next and make sure that those are progressing and that everybody is doing what they said they were going to do. And then we're starting to build the agenda for the next one. And that's, again, getting a refresh of what's changed. You know, are there any objectives that are different? How are we progressing against those objectives? How can we use that time together to proactively break through hurdles and get through some of those log jams that inevitably develop? And then kind of depending on the client, I'll have a number of, it might be weekly, it might be biweekly, maybe it's monthly kind of check-in calls where we're just making sure that things are progressing appropriately. And I'm doing similar things internally with my team because I want to hear from them what's going on and any issues. I want to make sure that we're getting in front of and presenting to the client. So it's a very, very proactive process. And it also ties together with, I'm aligning it with their fiscal year and their budgeting season. And so that puts us in that position to know, these are the objectives for next year. This is the budget that we have to put towards that. And obviously getting that all aligned, that's going to mean that I get a nice big contract in the following year, if we can continue to deliver and execute on those plans and help them achieve all of their goals and objectives along the way.
That's awesome. You have such a great process going and a lot of steps in there. And, you know, what really stuck out to me was your focus on maintaining a workable relationship. I really like that. And our CEO here, Charles Bernard, is actually writing a book called Selling Workability right now. And it's about how it's so important to establish workable relationships at the beginning during the prospecting stages, so that by the time that you get to delivery, you can communicate quickly and easily and everybody's kind of on the same page and, you know, here's where we are in this project, et cetera, et cetera. So I love your focus on that particular area and making sure that everyone is at the same place at the same time, catching up and all that kind of stuff. Very cool. So I'd love to hear more about your insights as a salesperson yourself. What is one of the toughest lessons that you've learned so far in your career?
I think the toughest is how costly it is to be in the wrong place. And what I mean by that is really the wrong turns that I've taken in my career. Although I think you could also apply it to time spent in opportunities where there's just not a good fit. And a lot of times you know that, but you know, you're trying to make your number or do whatever else, and it you just waste a lot of time. And so for me, the toughest, because it took a long time to recover and really get back on track, is when I just wasn't in the right organization. And what's interesting is when I left Bizarre Voice, I won't name the company, and I think I probably have taken it off my LinkedIn profile at this point, because it was only about a 7-month wrong term. But I got really clear about what the ideal fit for me was, right? I knew it was B2B. I knew it was working with large organizations. I knew it was selling to sales and marketing. I've sold to most parts of the organization, and sales and marketing, those are my people. So I knew I needed to be working with them. And I also knew one of the things that drives me is contribution. Mm-hmm. So I needed to be in a place where whatever it was that I was selling, I was making a meaningful difference for my clients. But what that also means for me in particular is I generally need to be working for a smaller organization. I want to make a meaningful contribution to my company. And that's really hard to do. I mean, I've worked for Oracle and I've worked for ADP, and it doesn't matter what I did there, I'm still a rounding error, and probably a rounding error on a rounding error. So again, it's having that fit. And I learned when I made that particular career wrong term that if I gave on any of those points, and I gave on a few of them, it wasn't going to work. And when you don't have that fit, when you don't have that alignment, you're never going to be the best, at least not for very long, and you're not going to have fun doing it. I've always said, like, one of my guiding principles is if you don't love what you're doing, it's work, and work sucks. So I always try and put myself in a position where I'm absolutely loving the work that I'm doing. I may not love 100% of it. There's always like stupid, lame things you have to do, right? But I want to enjoy most of it. And when I've not been in those places, it's really sucked and been painful. And I mean, in sales, where, you know, 50% oftentimes of your compensation is tied to what you produce, when you're not having fun, when you're not producing, it has a pretty significant financial impact as well. So that's, those have definitely been the toughest lessons by far. But, you know, learning from those and really getting that reinforced and getting on the right trajectory is kind of everything.
Awesome. Very cool. Now, what about books? You started to mention earlier and we saved it. I'd love to hear what your favorite sales or business growth books are.
Yeah. So I tend towards, and it's interesting, I had this conversation once with Paul DiVincenzo, who was the number one seller at Cintas for like four of five of the last 5 years. He sold $13.7 million at Cintas in a single year. So that's not unbelievable. I don't know what is. And he sort of helped me understand and see this as a really consistent theme is that early in your sales career, you tend to read a lot of sales books, like very tactical. And I think as you mature, your horizons start to broaden and you read more business books and kind of get, you know, get into psychology and a lot of other things. And probably the most impactful book that I've read in the last two or three years was Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink. And the structure of the book is sort of fascinating. So Jocko was one of the most decorated Navy SEAL commanders in the Iraq War. And the way that each chapter is structured is the chapter is a lesson. There's sort of a military story and lesson. And then there's how that translates into the business world. Mm-hmm. But the big takeaway is that overarching theme of extreme ownership. And even the initial chapter is he kind of opens with, you know, something went really, really wrong, as things often do in war. But things often go really, really wrong in business too. And there's often lots of blame to spread about. But he was the commander of that group and that particular issue. And he took 100% ownership of it because he's like, at the end of the day, all of this rolls to me. I don't think that's just a titled leader issue. Like, I've always thought of myself as somebody who leads from the field. I don't need to, I'm in an individual contributor role. Nobody reports to me, but that doesn't mean that I'm not a leader and that I can't have that kind of an impact. And I think this book really, really enforces that at so many levels. And the reason I thought it was so appropriate to your theme around remote work is you have to do that, right? There's not somebody looking over my shoulder, making sure that I'm doing my work, right? I take pride in that ownership. And I think with that, and another principle of the book is trust, mm-hmm. right? Things aren't ever going to go according to the plan that we set out at the beginning of the year or the beginning of the quarter. But you've got to trust that you've got great people, that you've done everything you can to enable them, and then trust them to take ownership of their own stuff and do what they need to do and make the right decision. So for a lot of reasons, I think that's just it's such a fantastic and impactful business book at every level of the organization, regardless of whether or not you're in a leadership role or not.
Very cool. And for our listeners, you can catch that in our show notes at criteriaforsuccess.com/pod65. Did you have another one that you wanted to share, or should we just highlight it there?
Let's leave it there. I mean, the bookshelf is deep, but that's a meaningful one. I think if you're going to go get one book, go get that one.
That's awesome. That's a great way to look at it too, because it's very overwhelming. I know that I myself have about 10 books in queue right now for when the next one gets finished, and it can be overwhelming. So it's good to just have one. Extreme Ownership. Grab that one. Start there. I like the theme too. Very cool. Now, wisdom. Do you have one piece of wisdom that you'd like to pass along to our audience?
Yeah, I think it's the lesson that I've been really trying to put into action the last number of years. I have heard my entire career the Jim Rohn quote that says, you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to know something like that. It's another thing to act on it. And for me, that's a lot of what the podcast and the subsequent event, the Sales Success Summit, was about is, frankly, again, it was an excuse. But the thing is, when you're number one in an organization, there's nobody to look up to. All you get is a bullseye on your back. So I also wanted to create community and an environment for the best of the best so that they had others that they could look up to and that they could learn from. And so that's the way that I've really tried to improve myself is by surrounding myself with folks in that way. And, you know, like anything, you get what you give. And I wanted to start with giving them something. And that was the podcast, right? That was a platform for them to share their story and to get some well-deserved recognition for what they've done. Hopefully to save them some time in the process. I often think of the podcast as mentoring at scale. You know, this is a conversation and coaching that they've done and sat down over numerous coffees and meals and beers and everything else to say the same stuff over and over again. So I wanted to give them an outlet to share those insights and spend a couple of hours with me one time in a way that now that gets reused and re-listened to thousands of times, and they can start somebody there, right? Rather than regurgitating the basics, like, why don't you listen to this first and show that you're committed, and then come to me with like your follow-up questions. And I think everybody wins in that scenario.
Definitely. Very neat. I like that a lot. And of course, you know, here at CFS, we talk quite a bit about sales playbooks and how important it is to take your processes, your templates, you know, the things that really build your process, the mechanics and the philosophy behind what you're doing and what you're selling, and put it into a sales playbook. So I'd love to hear, do you have an actionable tip that our listeners might consider adding to their playbook, whether it's maybe a process that you might have or a template or a tip or just something that they might throw in their playbook?
Absolutely. So we've already talked about kind of one of the processes that I use around account management, but the most important process that I have and my most important tip is plan your day. And you've got to do it every day. So I have been working on a process that I have developed over the last probably 10 years. It began with, I listened to, what's funny is I've never found as good of a resource to consume this information, but it started with David Allen's Getting Things Done.
And somebody, that's a good one.
It is. Somebody gave me a recording of him presenting like a two-day seminar.
Okay.
And I've tried reading his book and I've tried looking at other stuff since, and it just doesn't compare. So if you can figure out that, actually, if you find it, will you email me? Because I'd love to go back and review that. You can email me scott@top1.fm. But that was the beginning of it. And then again, layers got built upon that. And the most important thing that I do is I start every day with a process that takes me about 30 to 45 minutes. I'm an extreme morning person. So I'm typically up at 4:30 or 5 in the morning.
Oh, man. You live a whole extra life.
I do. Well, I get to say that I get more done by noon than most people do in a full day. But once I've got my workout knocked out, I go through this process and I've got a checklist, even though I do it every single day, and I get all of my email accounts to inbox zero. And then it's kind of a triage process from there. It's looking at my calendar. It's confirming all of my appointments. It's understanding, you know, given what's on my calendar today, how much capacity do I have to do stuff? Sometimes when I'm on the road, it's nothing's going to happen today. I will try and keep the fires put out, but, you know, there's no other days. You know, you see some good white space in your calendar, or you've held some white space for yourself to work on some of the most important things. And so it's kind of reviewing my to-do lists, and it's basically just a giant triage process to understand what are my biggest priorities, what, as I look across my pipeline, what can I impact and move forward today? You know, and it's just building the action list for today. So it's very dynamic, right? It recognizes that on the days that I only have one extra hour that I can be heads down and focused on stuff, that's a very, very different day than when I've got 3 or 4 hours open. Mm-hmm. So it's understanding, what do you have to work with? What are the biggest priorities? What can you get done that's going to have the biggest impact? And then once that's all done, then I get on with it. And it also gives me, and this was a big Getting Things Done thing. He talks about just having a system where you trust the system and you don't have to carry around all of that psychic stress of all the different things that you're trying to remember. If you know that all that stuff that I need to remember is captured in a to-do list or in an email or on my calendar, and I can act on it from there, then you, again, you just don't have that burden and that worry, and you can be much more focused. So if there was one other book, and I just happened to be glimpsing it out of the corner of my eye, and it was perfect as we were talking about choosing only one book, because it's one of the most recommended books of the guests that have been on my podcast, and that is the book, The One Thing.
Okay.
So, and the whole purpose of that book is getting clear about, like, what is the one thing that's going to have the biggest impact, and just focusing on that one thing, or one thing at a time. So it's really a book about focus. So okay. If you struggle with that, it's another great, great read after you read Extreme Ownership. That'll be your second one thing.
Awesome. Well, I love your tip. Definitely time management and focusing on accomplishing your goals each and every day is so important. And something worth throwing in your playbook. And if you're using a Klaviyo sales playbook, you can actually click right on that weekly goals page and manage your weekly goals and your tasks and your daily activity right in there. It makes it super easy. So very cool. Thank you so much, Scott. And I have one last question for you about your sales podcast, because I'm sure that there are people listening in that are thinking, you know what? I am top 1% or I'm a top salesperson. What do I have to do to get on Scott's show? Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're not number one or in the top 1% yet, well, then you can listen and hopefully we'll get you there. So I would love it if you would subscribe to the podcast. Any place that you would find podcasts, you will find Sales Success Stories. The website is top1.fm. That's the number one. But if you type out the word one, you'll still get there.
Nice.
And if you are one of those elite top performers and would like to talk to me about an interview, then just send me an email. I'm scott@top1.fm.
Very good. Thank you so much for being on the show today, Scott. This has been awesome.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to today's show. You can find the notes for today's show at criteriaforsuccess.com/pod65. Be sure to tune in next week when we'll be continuing the conversation on managing remote salespeople with a special CFS roundtable about the topic. And all month we're writing about managing remote salespeople on the CFS blog, so be sure to check that out at criteriaforsuccess.com/blog. And just as a quick reminder, it is a 5-week podcast month. That means that we will be having a Q&A session on the 30th of July. So this is our last week to submit your questions. If you have a question or a comment, you want to know something about managing remote salespeople, or you think that there's an important point that we should point out on this podcast, please throw us a question, a comment, some sort of feedback via social media. You can find us on Twitter, and our handle on Twitter is @letstalksales with underscore in between the letters. So that's @let_talk_sales. And you can also use the #AskCFS, and that'll tag it so we know that you are posing this question for today's Q&A. Or if none of this works for you, be sure you could also shoot us an email at podcast@criteriaforsuccess.com. And if you're sending an email, you could also attach a voice memo with your question or comment if you'd like, and we can air that during the show. So please send us your questions. We'd love to hear it. And of course, be sure to subscribe to this podcast at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to shows. Your ratings and reviews help other people find us, and it also helps us stay encouraged and know that we're doing a good job over here. Let's Talk Sales is a production of Criteria for Success and is produced by myself here, Rebecca Smith, Arianna Miskell, and Elizabeth Frederick. Happy selling.